Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, beyond an annual flu shot or immunization for travel overseas, most of us probably don't give much thought to vaccinations now that we're adults. That's something strictly for kids. Or is it? An expert from the Centers for Disease Control joins us later for a look at adult vaccinations.
But first, it may take a village to raise a child, but families seeking help for a child's mental illness often feel isolated and alone. Most parents who negotiate the mental health system on their kids' behalf discover that resources are lacking as budget cuts take their toll. Too often, youth with mental illness fall through the cracks.
So how can a parent prevent this from happening to their own troubled child? Joining us are two guests who come from the problem from both sides. Michael Fitzpatrick is executive director of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. He holds a master's of social work from Boston College. Karen Winter Schwartz's own experiences dealing with a child's mental illness led her to write the novel Where Are the Cocoa Puffs? A Family's Journey Through Bipolar Disorder. She's a board member of NAMI Syracuse, New York. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Karen, we'd like to start with you. The book you wrote is a fictionalized account of what your family went through when it became clear that your oldest daughter needed professional help and intervention. And it occurred to me as I was reading your book that one of the hardest parts of dealing with mental illness in children is not knowing what's happening as it unfolds. So much of the behavior can be explained by other things, possibly developmental stages, family dynamics, individual personality traits. Can you describe what that process is like when it begins to be clear that you're dealing with something larger than you originally realized?
Yes, thank you, Lorraine. That's true. It is a process. It is a very difficult process because how do you separate regular teenage angst from early stages of a mental illness? It's almost impossible. And for a parent who comes at it totally unprepared, without any resources and without any help for the mental health community, the health community, or their family and friends, it's very, very difficult. And I think, you know, we had it a little bit easier because it got to the point where both my children have actually suffered greatly when they were young, and they both asked for help, which had made it easier. But it was still very, very difficult because the resources weren't there and the education wasn't there for any of us.
So how did you know who to turn to, and what do most parents do?
I didn't, and we don't. And where, of course, where you tell is your family doctor.
The pediatrician or the family doctor,
which is where he went. And unfortunately, she was misdiagnosed and mistreated with the wrong medication, made her worse. She got very sick, and I'm still to this day believe that that first medication may have made her as ill as she became.
May I ask you this? Was it your family doctor or pediatrician that actually prescribed, or did they refer you to a mental health professional?
It was a family doctor. It's a long story. I could certainly get into it. But it was, it was a family doctor, even though she was told that she was giving the medication incorrectly because my daughter had been seen a psychologist who said, this is what she needs, this is what I think she has. She refused to listen to us. Even I knew before I'd become involved with NAMI, because now I know a lot more, I would have never allowed that to happen. But my daughter is 18 at the time, so I had no control.
So even though the doctor was well-intentioned, it might have been a little bit out of their experience level.
Exactly.
And they weren't as well-versed with the pharmacological.
Which is one of the things we need to change, is educate the family doctors, because they're the ones with primary care in a lot of these cases with these children.
What about the schools? Did you have to involve the guidance counselor or anybody there?
Yes, and actually the schools were wonderful. We were very, very lucky. That's not always the case, but a lot of our family members, in this case, the schools are very good.
But so many times it seems that, an initial diagnosis from the first person that you see, whether it's the family physician or perhaps a psychotherapist, sometimes there's confusion. Oh, could it be depression? Could it be ADD, ADHD? There's a range of issues that come in. Also, at the same time, we're talking about adolescence, and the onset of many mental health issues occurs around the same time children go through puberty, so that can be confusing,
yes,
too.
Yes, it's very, very confusing. Of course, teenagers are by right a little nuts. I mean, they are, and that doesn't mean they have mental illness. They're all going through a huge hormonal and brain changes at that time. But there is a line, and this is where the early prodromal stages are happening, and we need better education. We need a clear-cut referral system between school counselors, family practitioners, psychologists, and psychiatrists. We need that collaboration. It has to be streamlined, and parents don't have the resources to be able to do that on their own.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Raff.
And we have been talking to Karen Winter Schwartz, who has written a book about her experiences dealing with childhood mental health and her children. And let's bring Michael Fitzpatrick into the conversation now. Michael is executive director of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and he's been with them for over a decade. Michael, how does Karen's situation, some of the things that she's talked about, how's that compared to what you're seeing on the national level?
I think Karen's experience is the experience of a lot of families. I think when she talks about the need to educate general practitioners, nurse practitioners, other health professionals on mental illness, the notion that we need to intervene early and engage and get a diagnosis, and really to build collaboration in the system between guidance counselors and psychiatry and mental health and other parts of the system in schools is right on point. The other piece I'd bring in, one of the things we know from our experience and what research tells us, that a lot of families in this country turn to clergy first before they'll turn to a school practitioner or a psychiatrist or a general practitioner. And so the need to educate the whole community, may that be clergy, may that be general practitioners, may that be guidance counselors and other school staff, is absolutely essential because we need to intervene early. And what we hear too often, that it takes 5-10 years for families to get an accurate diagnosis and the inadequate treatment for their family members. So, you know, is start with your pediatrician, get a comprehensive examination for your child to rule out other health conditions. If your pediatrician or general practitioner recommend an assessment or evaluation by a child psychiatrist, ask the pediatrician to help you get an appointment. Don't try to get one on your own, because the pediatrician is going to be in a better position to help you find a psychiatrist. We also recognize there's a national shortage of child and adolescent psychiatrists, so there's a waiting list. But if you can have your healthcare professional help make that referral, sometimes it happens much faster.
We know that there is still a stigma surrounding mental health, and I wonder, it must be very sensitive. Karen, can you talk about how you dealt with this with your own daughters?
Yeah, well, this is one of the points that Mike just made. The hardest thing for me personally was not only not knowing where to go, but the isolation I felt and the judgment I received and the embarrassment we felt, because people are judging you as parents. And it's embarrassing to want to talk, you know, try to get help in the mental health. It's a huge stigma. It's a huge problem. And I think it prevents people from getting the help they need, and it prevents people from talking about it. If we talked about it openly, if we educated in school, starting at the elementary school, NAMI has a program on breaking the silence that is in middle school, upper elementary, middle school, and high school. It's a great program. We've tried for 2 years to get it into our local schools. We've had actually quite difficulty getting the schools to take it on, even though it's fully covered. So this is really important. It's not only to get the medical community involved, but other people, other parents, because they were not alone. 25% of people are dealing with some sort of mental illness. 25% of families are directly affected.
It must be hard also for the children themselves, to have to maybe acknowledge something isn't right and that they do need help. What kind of advice do you give parents? Is there a way that you can phrase it so that the child knows, no, there's nothing wrong and we do need to get help?
Right. Again, I suggest that we start educating children. I'm not talking about teenagers, but I'd educate them when they're 7, 5, 6 about mental health and mental wellness and anxiety, and let them know that, you know, Uncle Jim, who's in the mental hospital, needs our help and support, and don't stigmatize him as a crazy guy, you know, don't talk to him. And this is what I grew up with. I grew up with a lot of negative stigma surrounding mental illness. And so it's very difficult when it affected my own family members to not only recognize it, but accept it and know how to deal with it. I mean, I never have been that alone in my entire life, as I felt during that period of time. And it was unconscionable what we went through as a family because we didn't get the support we needed.
Michael, what about another aspect that unfortunately it has to come into play when we discuss how a family copes with a child's mental health and mental illness? Because it can be a costly procedure. Not every insurance company will cover that sort of thing. What about costs and treatment? I mean, we're talking about just for talk therapy alone, often it can be $100 an hour.
Right. And I think for most mental illness, the children experience that it is really a mix of talk therapy and perhaps medication. Certainly there are a couple ways to look at this. One is that in 2008, the mental health parity health insurance law was passed, commonly called the Wellstone-Domenici Act. The final regulations have not been released by the Department of Health and Human Services within the federal government, but the president has promised to release those regulations. Once they're released, many more people will have the opportunity to have insurance plans that cover mental health coverage at parity with medical surgical coverage. That will make an enormous difference. Millions of people have access to care. With the Affordable Care Act being fully released in 2014, again, millions of more Americans will have access to care for mental health issues, and that's built into that act, all through the act. So that's good news coming. I think the difficulty at this point is that they can be tricky. There aren't enough child psychiatrists. At this point in time, many private insurance plans don't cover the treatment that families need, so families may need to pay out of pocket. It can be challenging to find a child and adolescent psychiatrist that accepts Medicaid coverage. So it's very, very difficult. And again, our hope is that the combination of the Affordable Care Act with the final regulations on the health insurance parity law will begin to make a difference. But again, there are other alternatives that families can turn to. Certainly NAMI. In organizations like NAMI, help families know that they're not alone and they can get support from other families who have walked in their shoes. You can go onto our website, NAMI.org. There are many resources for families, fact sheets, online video clips, and more. We produced a number of what we call family guides on evidence-based practices, youth depression. They're available at NAMI.org/CAAC. And also the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry has a wonderful series called Facts for Families and other resources for families at aacap.org. Tremendous amount of information is available out there. Cost is a problem. Access to child and adolescent psychiatrists are a problem. And it gets back to what Karen talked about in the beginning. We need to educate a larger group of health professionals who understand what's going on with kids who have a mental illness. And again, that's general practitioners and other healthcare professionals to bring them into the mix so people can get services when they need them.
I'm going to bring up a complex situation, which we won't have a lot of time to go into, but Karen does mention it in her book, and I imagine it changes the dynamics. What happens if a child behavior leads to an incident involving the police? Does that change everything?
Unfortunately, many children with mental health conditions come in contact with the police. There are many police officers who have been trained in something called the crisis intervention training or CIT training around the country who understand what's happening when they come into contact with a young person with a mental illness who perhaps is out of control. And they understand that diverting youth from the mental health treatment system is important. But too often, that type of training isn't available. We have done a tremendous amount of work with CIT and CIT for youth. And again, you can go on our website on our policy section and look into our CIT for youth program. Working with the courts, working with the juvenile court system, we have a long way to go. So I think it is a combination of working with your treating professional to engage early and to what a lot of our groups have done or a lot of our affiliates around the country is work with their local police departments to make sure their police are trained so when they get into an incident with a youth with a mental illness, there's a positive outcome, because it's a very, very difficult situation. There's nothing more traumatic for a family than to go through a commitment procedure or an engagement with police.
I would suggest to parents who know they're dealing with a family, or not just parents, any family member, is to contact your local police before an incident happens. Let them know your loved one has a history, so they go into the situation without their guns pulled. They know they're dealing with an unstable person. You should set that up ahead of time. So call your local police station and let them know.
Well, that's tremendous advice. That's exactly involvement with your local police, having them get trained, but also having them know your situation is
yes,
very important.
We don't want to deal with suicide by cop. That's very common, right. And we don't want to get into that.
Valuable advice from people who know. Thank you very much for your time and your expertise.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Michael Fitzpatrick is Executive Director of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and Karen Winter Schwartz is the author of Where Are the Cocoa Puffs? A Family's Journey Through Bipolar Disorder. For more information on NAMI and Karen Winter Schwartz's book, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org, where you can also download podcasts of our show.
Coming up, do you really need that shot? The ins and outs of adult vaccinations with an expert from the CDC. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.